Yeah, thank you. That was a very interesting presentation. Thank you. But I have a question. It's what do you mean by intelligence? I mean you've talked a lot about intelligence here, but how are you defining intelligence? I mean, what do you mean by the word intelligence? How can we really define the word intelligence? How can we take what is the boundary between intelligence and not intelligent? I mean, how you really do need to problematize that term. What do we mean by intelligence? Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to expand on something which I did a while ago, which is the typical midwit arguments, which you'll see a video that was part of a quick pint on the typical midwit arguments. Well, I want to look here at one argument which I didn't look at in my midwit arguments quick pint video, and that is the what do you mean by the word argument? I don't know if there's an informal fallacy for this, but the insist or I think there is actually insisting on perfectly defining one's terms is regarded as an informal fallacy, and that is exactly the fallacy which midwits engage in, the what do you mean by argument. Now, why is this a problem? Well, the essence of science and the essence of trying to understand things means that to some extent you do have to define your terms. The way that we approach comprehending the world is this mass of incomprehensible chaos. The world is this has no necessary inherent logic to it, and the way that we approach understanding it is by breaking it up into manageable chunks, into categories that allow correct predictions to be made. That's what science is interested in doing, breaking the world up into categories. This is known as nominalism, and allowing correct predictions to be made. The alternative view of science, and one that comes from, I guess, from Plato, Karl Popper argues this, is essentialism. And this is the idea that the purpose of science is to understand essentially to define the nature of things. And so it becomes all about defining your terms. What do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? Now, what Popper argues is that what we might call cautious essentialism is what is necessary in science, i.e., to some extent, you have to define your terms. Of course, you do, and you have to define your categories. You have to have a system of categories. But you can't expect those categories to be perfect because no category is going to be perfect. No category is going to exactly make sense of the world. No category is going to avoid having certain, no system of categorization is going to avoid having certain things which sit outside it. So you have to engage in what is called cautious essentialism, where you cautiously have these categories, you realize they're imperfect, but you're practical about it, and you break the world up into these manageable chunks, and a category can be considered scientific in nature if it allows correct predictions to be made. And as you do this more and more and more, then you refine your categories, you come up with more and more nuanced categories, and eventually you come up with a more nuanced and a more accurate understanding of the world. Now, obvious example of this would be the difference between short and tall. There is no hard and fast borderline between short and tall. There is no agreed place with humans where we can say this is a person who is short and this is a person who is tall. It is not something that can be exactly defined. However, it can be defined cautiously. We can say, for example, that 5'10" is the average male height, and we can say, well, is 5'9", 5'8" short? Probably, but no. Is 5'11" or 6 foot tall? No. But certainly there are tall people. There are people that are 6'6", and there are people that are 5'3". But of course, there is this borderline between the two, between short and tall, which is neither one or the other. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about short and tall people. And one of the reasons that it is useful to divide up into short and tall is because it allows correct predictions to be made. There are correlates of height, as I have looked at before on this channel. Intelligence weakly correlates with height. Certain dark triad traits weakly negatively correlate with height. So height in men anyway. So height allows correct predictions to be made, and to that extent, it is a scientific category. The concept of tall allows correct predictions to be made, and to that extent, it is a scientific category. Now, that doesn't mean that we can exactly and precisely define the nature of tall or the nature of short or whatever, but we can roughly and approximately and cautiously do so, and therefore it allows correct predictions to be made. And that is what people of the nominalist viewpoint in science, that is all they are saying. They are saying that we are confronted by this world of chaos. We have to break it up into manageable chunks in order to understand it. Those manageable chunks are scientific to the extent that they are useful, to the extent that they permit, I'm sorry to repeat myself here, but correct predictions to be made, but they cannot be perfectly defined. It's impossible to perfectly define everything. You always find things that are on the borders. So, for example, let's say you divide the world up into races. This is often a frequent argument that you get from the midwit. How can you define race? What do you mean by race? Where's the border between one race and the other? Well, what you can say about that is that you have these different clusterings of genes that are separated from other clusterings of genes. And we can conceive of them almost like a bow tie, where here's one race and here's the other race, and there's a tiny ichthus in between, a tiny number of people that don't quite fit into one race or another, who are what's called clines due to periods of contact between races during periods of high civilization. But in general, most of humanity fits into one of 12 racial groups that are distinct genetic clusters. And yes, there are, of course, groups that have developed, ethnic groups that have developed on the borders of areas where two races meet, where there are mountain ranges or seas or rivers or whatever that separated two racial groups for very, very substantial periods of time. There have been, since that separation, rises and falls in civilization, migrations, and thus the creation of ethnic groups that are clines, that are mixtures of these two original racial groups that were created a very, very long time ago, such as Hispanics or Uzbeks or whatever, or Georgians or Turks or whatever it happens to be. But the vast majority of humanity can be fitted into these different racial groups, and they allow correct predictions to be made in so much as they allow correct predictions to be made about health in different ecologies, growth patterns, all kinds of other things that you can find information on, and therefore they are useful categories. So it can be argued that yes, you cannot exactly and with 100% certainty draw a precise line between one race and another. You cannot say there is this one gene that only appears in this race and not in any other race. But it is a scientific category in so much as it allows correct predictions to be made, and in so much as there are already sort of small numbers of people that fall outside of these categories, what race are they? Groups like the Negritos or whatever it happens, as I said, all these clines or whatever. So that is the scientific category. So that's all that's being said. So what are these people doing when they say, what do we mean by race? Well, they are engaging in a number of tactics. First of all, they are engaging in a kind of appeal to ignorance. They are saying that a kind of nihilism, that we can't possibly know something. You cannot define the word with absolute certainty. You cannot state the difference between different racial groups or different levels of intelligence with absolute certainty, and therefore the concept is no good and the concept needs to be dismissed. Now, the obvious problem with that argument is that it fails the appeal to pragmatism, William James's appeal to pragmatism, the idea that if there is a dispute in science or philosophy, then it comes down to, can you live by it? If you can't live by it, then the argument is meaningless. If you are going to follow that train of thought of asking for perfect definitions of words and perfect delineation between categories, then you should be able to live by that in your everyday life. Can you? Well, obviously not. Because you wouldn't be able to distinguish between fast and slow. You wouldn't be able to work out whether you should cross the road in front of a car or not. You wouldn't be able to say, this car is coming so fast it's going to hit me, or this car isn't, because you wouldn't be able to make that division between fast and slow. You can't live without having a system of predictive categories. And so therefore, you must accept that there must be imperfect categories that are that you cautiously live by, via which you make predictions, and therefore your dismissal of the concept that you don't like, whether it is race or whether it is intelligence or whatever, on those grounds is unreasonable and inconsistent, and the argument can be dismissed. So that's the first thing. It fails the appeal of pragmatism, and it is a kind of appeal to perfection, which is impossible to achieve, and it is a fallacy. And the reason that it is done is because, of course, the person does not happen to like that particular concept. If we were talking about a concept that they had no problem with, such as emic and etic in anthropology, so the etic perspective in anthropology is the outsider perspective, the emic perspective is the insider perspective. I've never heard a cultural anthropologist say, well, how are you defining etic? Where is the border between an insider perspective and an outsider perspective? Could not an anthropologist have both perspectives? Well, the answer is yes. The answer is yes, there is the problem of anthropologists going native. There is the problem of anthropologists advocating an insider perspective. But they won't problematize that term because they have no problem with it. But they will problematize the idea that you can't distinguish between intelligent and non-intelligent, or you can't distinguish between different races or different genders or whatever it happens to be, because they don't happen to like that term. So that's the first problem with it. It is a manifestly fallacious argument. The second is that it's clearly just an example of academic posing. These people have been told that it is profound to question things. A questioning mind, a cynical mind, a sceptical mind is an intelligent mind. And so you're trying to signal to other people that they are in the presence of a profound mind. And so you try and signal this by saying, what do we mean by this term? I'm so thoughtful. I'm so deep. Again, from a practical perspective, would you do this in everyday life? In the context of an academic conference, you're saying, what do we mean by intelligence? But if we were in a normal situation, let's say, for example, not normal, but in a non-academic situation, let's say, for example, an aeroplane is crashing and both the pilots are dead, and we need to be able to find someone on board who can quickly catch on, quickly work out what's going on, and be taught by air traffic control how to take control of the plane. Obviously, what you're going to need is an intelligent person to do that. And to what extent and for how long in a situation like that, when the plane is crashing and we need to find an intelligent person, is someone like this going to ask, what do we mean by intelligence? How do we define intelligence? Where is the border between intelligent and non-intelligent? Of course they're not. They're going to understand immediately what intelligent means. They're going to understand immediately what the markers are of intelligence. And they're going to try and find an intelligent person who can take control of the plane. So this shows you that it is simply an example of academic posing. It is simply an example of trying to seem profound, to ask what you mean by a term. Yes, we should define our terms, but only within reason. And one of the problems with lots of humanities research in general is they spend about a third of an article waffling on, defining their terms, defining this, defining that, and don't really get anywhere. And where this leads to ultimately is this essentialist idea from Plato that there are, in a world of forms, there are the kind of demiurge has created the exact notion of, I don't know, intelligence, or the exact notion of a dog, or the exact notion of a race, and it exists in the world of forms perfectly, and it is kind of reflected on Earth. But that is a religious idea. That is not a realistic idea. There are no clear boundaries between things. There are no absolute hard and fast boundaries between things. We create these boundaries for our own purposes in order to better make sense of the world. And so that is why, if you really want to know, is someone a midwit? Is someone really not worth dealing with? Is someone an academic poser? Then if they ask in a context in which you're having some kind of reasonably academic discussion, how are you defining geography? Well, I suppose that depends. Well, I suppose that depends how you define sociology, doesn't it? That person is an academic poser. That person is a midwit. And it really is time to go and talk to somebody else.
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you can also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!